Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Kelly McGrath-Martinson, and we're going to be talking about her new book, A Year of Inspired Living, Essays in Guided Journaling for Self-Reflection. As publisher of Natural Awakenings Long Island magazine, each month Kelly writes a letter to readers that sets the tone of that issue's unique editorial theme. 4 years ago, within 2 days of publishing her first letter, You Only Regret the Things You Don't Do, a reader called to thank her for the thought-provoking piece that spoke deeply to her. Month after month, topic after topic, responses to Kelly's editorial letters grew, and the readers were connecting with her words in life-changing ways. A Year for Inspired Living speaks with wisdom, tongue-in-cheek, self-effacing humor, and raw honey to help readers reach into the hidden corners of their lives and develop a greater awareness of their own personal relationships and journeys. You can find out more by visiting her website, which is ayearofinspiredliving.com, and I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Kelly to the show. Good day, Kelly. Thanks for joining
me. Hey, thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. I enjoyed reading your stories, your letters, the combination of the book. It really was great. So, before we talk about the book and the magazine, I thought that the story, I think it was in the introduction of your book, you talk about how you made the decision, kind of where your journey took you from where you were doing before, in a rather corporate environment, to becoming the publisher of the magazine, and the trials and tribulations, especially the timing, you know, that kind of maybe some people would have thought twice. But the reason
sure.
I would like for you to kind of talk about that, because I think there are a lot of people out there now that are, you know, in situations where, you know, either their job may be ending or has ended, or they are simply not doing what their heart is calling them to do. And I would love for them to hear your story in that transition.
Sure. Okay. So to take you back to, I would have to take you back almost 10 years before I even started began with the magazine was 5 years ago. But 5 years prior to that, like you said, I was an executive. I was working with a biotech company, and I was working with patients at their end stage. I was in the research department, so patients that were very, very sick would be candidates for our drug. At the same time that I was doing this work with these critically ill patients, my husband was diagnosed with cholangiocarcinoma, which is a bile duct cancer. He had an autoimmune disease that is a precursor to this cancer, so while we did know it was possible, it wasn't really probable, but his diagnosis came, and around the same time, my son was diagnosed with a very rare form of epilepsy, and it's called Landau-Kleffner. So I'm working for this biotech company, and I'm thinking, this is my destiny. This is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to be an executive. I'm supposed to have a company car, wear a black suit, high heels, you know, climb the corporate ladder. But at the same time I'm trying to do that, I'm also trying to be, you know, the best wife, mother, and caregiver to two people that are critically ill. Fast forward, Kevin gets a liver transplant. He goes through chemo radiation, Kevin being my husband, he goes through chemo radiation, and he gets half a liver donated from his brother. He goes into remission, and he's fine, and, you know, around a year after that, Dylan gets this immunoglobulin therapy, and my son, he's fine. And just when everybody's fine and I'm ready to kind of put my black heels back on and, you know, button my black suit, I'm ready to just take the next step. I talk to one of the managers and say, okay, you know, my life is settled. I really want to look at the executive track. And 2 days later, they said, you're fired. So, and not only was I was fired with a non-compete. So I could not work in the field that I had worked in for 15 years. I had to wait 15 months. So I went from running, like literally like a chicken without a head, running from one hospital to one doctor to one research place to, you know, being in an airport, drinking old coffee, calling home, to all of a sudden everybody's healthy, and I literally can't work. So I sat down, and that's where the writing started. I couldn't do anything. I'd wake up, I'd drink coffee, I would just write. And just a lot of it was just free-form writing, sort of what I wanted. Sometimes it was just doodling. And one thing that kept shining through was I'd had enough of disease. So I just kept writing. I wanted to meet people. I wanted my job. What kept shining through, and it wasn't written right out for me, it was me looking back at my scribblings where I could really decipher that I needed my next job to be helping people before they got sick, preventing them, you know, from getting sick. And I wrote down things like, oh, could I be a life coach? Could I go back for nursing, a speech pathologist? You know, because I also wanted to do sort of alternative to medical care, some alternative field. And everything that I wrote down, I think, made me very aware so that when I opened Natural Awakenings, which I had read every month, there was an existing magazine in my town, when I opened it up, it was evident that the ad was super tiny. I probably passed it a million times, but this time I was able to see it and see that Natural Awakenings as a magazine was for sale. So I do credit my writing for just helping me to be really aware of what I wanted, even though I didn't know what I wanted. So I took my severance package and I rolled the dice and I purchased this existing magazine, which was actually failing at the time. It was doing really bad, and everybody said, you're crazy, don't do it. And I should say everybody but my husband. And my husband has a definitely different view now, where he says, come on, Cal, you only live once. You know, he has a very, very keen sense about what's important and give life a try. And you know, he wouldn't say risk the house, but you know, take the risk if it's not gonna knock you out. Take the risk is kind of his attitude. So with his, you know, mental support, I got the magazine, and then the first thing I had to do was write a publisher letter and lay out the magazine and lay out some of the articles. And I had never written one before, and so I just wrote kind of my journey, that five-year quick journey in 800 words or less. And that was called You Only Regret the Things You Don't Do. So.
Yeah. Wow, you know, and there's just, you know, so much in that, you know, the taking the risk, you know, of doing something that, you know, other people discouraged you from doing, you know, and you know,
for sure,
you know, basically following your heart. You know, that's the one thing I think, you know, and I think people are you know, leaning more toward following the heart and not really necessarily listening to others. But I still think there's a lot of peer pressure, social pressure, you know, family pressures, you know, that and fear, you know, that prevent people from taking that step.
Sure. And I don't want it, like I said, we wasn't like we were risking the whole mortgage. It wasn't, but it was a huge amount of money, and it was a huge risk. But you know, if you believe in yourself, like I kept saying to the people who said to me, don't do it, it's a failing, the numbers are failing. I'm like, I know they're failing, but I'm going to bring them up. Like, I have enough faith in myself. And I mean, even Natural Awakenings, to their credit, kept saying, like, are you sure you can sell? Because you need to sell ads and you need to be a salesperson. I said, I've just sold a doctor to give my brother-in-law his liver, and I can sell. Like, trust me, the selling part I've got. But the funny thing too, you mentioned timing, and I forgot to include that part of this story, is when I finally pulled the trigger, I purchased the magazine, I wrote my first letter, we went to print. And literally within days of the magazine hitting the streets, I live in Long Beach, New York, and so we, in 2012, at the time, not any longer because Puerto Rico had a pretty devastating hurricane, but at the time we had one of the most devastating hurricanes hit our island. So my office was set up. I had my computer. I had everything in a basement area, computer, phones, file cabinets, contracts, and Hurricane Sandy and the universe had a different idea, and they wiped that out along with my niece's bedroom, who was living with us in a den. So that was definitely a setback, because not only was I, you know, worried about my own magazine, but it was supported by advertisers. Mm-hmm. And these advertisers were now not going to be in business, at least not for the foreseeable future, you know. So that was a definite scary time, I would say. But, you know, I just head down. I found pockets where I could work. And literally I would drive to Panera an hour away to get Wi-Fi to do my layout, and, you know, it worked, thank God.
Yeah. Yep. Sometimes I have to drive, if I'm out on the road, I have to drive to do a show. It's like, well,
right,
let me go
sure,
ahead
and you got
to
find
connect
Wi-Fi.
Connect to Bojangles Wi-Fi.
yeah, exactly. What's the password? French fries. You
know? Exactly, exactly. Well, so now tell us a little bit about the book, A Year for Inspired Living. How did the idea come about?
Okay, so like I had mentioned in the introduction, I had written a lot of publisher letters. Obviously, I write one each month, and I've had the magazine. And I would get crazy local response. I mean, people that I'd never met would come up to me in Whole Foods. We'd distribute there, and wow, that letter. And half the time, you know, after I write it, it's almost like my own therapy. I write it, it kind of goes away for me. And they'll say, oh, you know, what you wrote about faith, that connected, you know, I've got to go, whether it's back to church or I got to believe in something other than myself. And so people were emailing me, people were calling, and I'm saying that, wow, people are really connecting to this writing. And then on the web, we were getting a ton of connection, too. We'd look at all the articles we posted, and we'd have these huge authors. You know, Chris Carr would be on our website, but yet the number of clicks on my publisher letter would be more than on her, you know, editorial. So I knew I had something that people wanted to hear. So I put the book together originally as just the essays. And the whole time I said, I don't know, I'm not ready to submit this to publishing houses or agents, because it just, every time I read it, I'm like, it just doesn't seem ready. So what these publisher letters are is they're my kind of prose or experience with a certain event. Let's say, you know, mm-hmm. something as simple as you regret the things you don't do. You know, that's a real, so then I'd write the things that I regretted if I wouldn't do surfing. It wasn't until I was 40 years old until I started surfing. And the reason I did it is because of exactly that. Because if I didn't, I kept watching people have so much fun. I didn't want to be the person on the shore. I wanted to be the person having fun. So I got out there, and it was scary because now I'm 40 and I have, you know, the reality fears that I could get hurt versus when you're 7 and you just go out there and surf.
mm-hmm.
But, you know, so I had all these commentary pieces, but I kept thinking, this is really good, but one, it's not like, you know, I have my PhD. It's not like I spent a year on an ashram learning all this. This is just sort of Kelly, and I'm just sort of every man, you know, with quotes, every man, like every person. Maybe people, I should encourage people to do the same. So then I put the page for people to write. So I'll do an essay, You Only Regret the Things You Don't Do. There was an essay on dealing with loss, on anger, on blame, on choices, on who you want to be. And I'll tell you my experience in the book and some of the aha moments I have. And mm-hmm. there's a page for you to write, if you connect with that same story, you can write your own aha moment based on the same subject. You know, I talk about fighting with family and thinking you know somebody just because, you know, they're your sister. That's an interesting topic for people who have sisters. You know, it's funny, here we are, we're 47, 48 years old, and we say, oh, we know that person. I know why they're doing that thing that they do, whether it's your sister, your mother, your aunt, your best friend. But the truth is, how well do you know them now? You knew them when you were 10 and 7, but really, you know, there's 30 years between you all, so maybe get past some of the arguments and some of the nonsense and some of the thinking that you know them. So it's stuff like that, those different topics that I think everyone can relate to.
Yeah, very, very much. You know, there are things that looking at people experience all the time. You know, when I went through, it was reading them, you know, I had my experiences pop up according to, you know, what the particular topic was. And you know, and I love, so at the back of, well, first of all, it's set up by month with, or chapters, or monthly chapters, so to speak, and then sub-chapters. So so basically you really have what amounts to is a topic and spot for writing per week, right?
Yep. And then the last week of a month is for you to write your own letter based on, you know, whether it, you could base it on something that happened to you during that week. You could base it on, you could do gratitude journaling. You could sort of do anything, or you could base it on the journey that you're having with the book. So the last page on each month, so we give you three. I give you three different topics to reflect on, and then the last one, there's no topic. It's for you to write your own publisher letter. And the reason, again, that I did that is because it's kind of nice, and again, it's almost like therapy, I say all the time, because I'm spilling my heart out, but I'm not talking to, initially I thought I was talking to my readers, because I have, you know, 55,000 readers of the magazine, but really if you go back and look, or I went back and looked, I'm talking to myself. I'm kind of processing something, whether it's an argument with somebody or, you know, whatever it is, I'm talking to myself and I'm telling myself, this is who I am, but this is who I want to be. So I got to remember to be the person I want to be. So that's the goal of the last page, is that maybe the readers will actually write their own publisher letter, which is literally just like a conversation with a friend, but the friend is you.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's one of those things where I could see where people would, you know, at the end of the year, just, you know, pull out their writings, you know, and put it, you know, look at it and really kind of get an overview of how the year went, you know, some of the pluses and minuses, and, you know, it'd be a great tool for reflection, or even for someone to write their own book.
Right. For sure, to write their own book, and even to, you know, if we don't, we're talking about following up with other books, another year inspired, that sort of thing. But even if that never happened, or somebody never purchased the next book in the series, this is your book because you've written it. So I would keep it around forever, because what's going to happen, and what I talk about all the time, is that we have these great ideas. We know who we want to be. We, you know, I always say, we know, even I say it to my kids, we know how we want to publish ourselves. You know, we choose clothes, we choose how we're wearing our hair, the words we want to say. So we know how we want to publish ourselves, but then life gets in the way. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm much more stressed than I want to be. I'm running around more frantically, not taking time for meditation. So the book is good because, you know, 3 years from now, when you've sort of fallen off, because we all do, and we're, you know, we're just maybe too involved in our own head or involved in drama or whatever it is, it's just a nice book to pull out and say, 3 years ago I said I wanted to be this person. Am I that person? You know, and if not, maybe what can I change? It's a, you know, simple things like fighting less and pulling anger out and forgetting blame, you know, those kind of things. It's a book that I hope, if people really engage in it, that they keep it forever and they check in, maybe as a New Year's resolution, they check in, or mid, you know, years down the line, and say, am I still doing what I wanted to do back in 2018 when I started that book?
Exactly. Well, what I'd like to do is maybe just highlight a topic or two from some of the months and give an example and talk about it. Now, one of the ones I loved in January, now the January, the topics were resolutions, living, narcissism, and then, of course, the letter. But in the section on living, in that one you had the writing exercise toward the back is basically writing your living wish list.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that, because I thought that was you know, that was interesting. That was just an interesting exercise.
Well, so a lot of people, you know, it's kind of a take on the, what is it called, the bucket list. And the bucket list is the things you want to do before you kick the bucket. And I always thought that was, to me, that's too much pressure. If I had a list that said, you know, I want to ride a bull before I kick the bucket. I mean, I swear, every time I walked across the street, I'd be like, that bull, you know, it was just too, for me, a bucket list is more pressure than I want to put on myself. So I thought instead, why not? And the other thing too is our ideas change. So, you know, a living list, there's no absolute, there's no pressure. A living list is today I looked at somebody and they were ziplining and I said, you know what, I'm putting that on my living list. And in 3 years, if I have a bad back or if I have a, you know, reason that it's no longer something that I think will serve me, it can come off. It's not something I have to do before I die. It's my living list. These are the things that I want to do during my life. But if I don't do them, I'll swap them out for something else. So I just felt like it was a little bit more, and, you know, the essay kind of talks about that we have to live a bit like we're dying, but not with that kind of fear base, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's
so
good.
You know,
and that, yeah, and reframing that, you know, to living versus the bucket, I mean, it does take, it does focus the mind on living rather than the fact of, you know, before I die, you know? It's like,
right,
you know?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, it also, what I hope is that a living list allows you wiggle room to, it doesn't have to be so extreme. You know, I think one of the things, I hope, I got to recheck my edits, but I think one of the things that I put on my living list was, you know, be more present to my children. You know, that's something that I always want to do, but guess what? When they're 35, that probably would be a little annoying for them. You know, I have a mom, stop ringing my doorbell. You know, they're probably like, cross that off and let's put something new about your grandkids. You know, so it's just more of an evolving list than, you know, an extreme sort of pressure list. That's
I like that. And then the entry that you had on narcissism, you know that was interesting. This is, I mean, we're really, you know, in today's environment, I mean, narcissism is it's just like in our face.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, the narcissism there too, what I was kind of talking about, and because we can all say, oh, I know I'm not narcissistic, but you know what, I think we're all more, there's the extreme narcissism, you know, the Khloe Kardashians, the, you know, the real narcissists, you know, and I don't know her personally, so I'm just pulling that name out of a hat, but you know, that narcissistic, you know, reality TV behavior. But then there's also, and that's what this chapter is about, is that narcissism that exists that makes us think everything is about us. Or that, you know, I was just having a conversation with my husband, and he was saying, oh, I think, you know, our son thought this. I think he might have been mad at me. And we were talking about a recent fire we had, and I said, there's no way. He's not even thinking about you. He's thinking about his favorite trophy that just burned. You know what I mean? So, but we all do it. We all think that people are thinking about us, and, you know, most of the time they're not.
Yeah. I had a woman on probably about a month and a half ago, I think it is now, wrote a book called Everyday Narcissism, you know, and she really made the distinction between, that everyday, you know, our world, our bubble kind of view of ourselves versus the clinical, you know, narcissistic, you know, personality,
right.
You know, disorder,
yeah.
You know, so,
and
so,
and
I mean,
I think it's
and
very
it was
hard to, oh, sorry,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, because, you know, in a way, I mean, you know, it's hard to go through life, you know, not thinking about you. You know what I mean? It's,
right.
You know, it's there's a natural aspect to it, you know, before it gets to a point of being clinically destructive.
Right. And so the chapter kind of is narcissism, and as a title, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek. You know, I don't think my readers are all narcissistic. Although I will say, I grew up in the 70s, and I would say my parents were great, but I was sort of very independent. I was definitely not the solar system for them. I wasn't their everything. I wasn't being doted on. So I do worry about the younger kids right now, these, you know, 5 to 25-year-old kids, because parenting was, they had much different experiences being parented, and I do worry that their narcissism could be worse just because of that doting nature, you know, and I don't know if it will be, but I do, you know, I do it with my own kids. My kids are my universe, but I have to, you know, balance it and pull back and not let them think that I believe they hung the moon or else they'll be really narcissistic, and, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, in that particular section, there was one thing that it really gave me a chuckle, and it was about social media, and the example says, quote, "For instance, you see on Facebook that your daughter's friend had 5 girls over for a sleepover, and your daughter was left off the guest list. Your reaction is to hit the passive aggressive like button, thinking smugly, I like this to let you know I don't like it." You know, I mean, it's funny because I can see that happening.
Of course. I mean, you know what? I'm guilty of it. And that's the other thing, too. My book is definitely, I think, different in that I'm not saying, don't do this, don't be passive aggressive. I'm saying, I've been there. I've been the mom whose kid doesn't get invited. I see it on Facebook. I'm like, uh-huh. Just so you know, I saw this, like, you know, ba-boom. And, you know, you think you dropped a bomb. And the truth is, if you sit back and you look at that person's life, you know, maybe they're putting that picture up. They don't even realize they left you off the list. They, you know, they put it up because somebody said something like they're not a good mom or whatever it is. Or maybe they're just feeling like they're struggling and they want to put this picture up to say, hey, look what I did. And they don't even realize that they're hurting somebody, you know, again, and that it's not all about you on the other end, you know?
Right, exactly, yeah. So, but, you know, and that's the one thing I liked about your book is that you gave, you know, your real-life examples. You're like, hey, this is just me. Like I say, I'm just Kelly, you know, and, I'm not perfect, you know, and this is some of the things I've learned, you know.
Right. That was the hardest part, to be totally like, the book is sort of warts and all, you know, and I think I write right in the beginning that I'm going to share everything with my readers. I'm going to share all my crazy, and then I write because I think y'all got some crazy too, you know, like because I think we all do, especially, you know, running around trying to be perfect in every position we play in this field of life, whether it's as a doctor, a worker, a mother, a grandmother, whatever it is, you know, it's enough to make us all a little kooky, you know.
You certainly can. I just want to let listeners know that in a couple of minutes we'll be taking a quick break. And if you want to call in and ask Kelly any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions you would like for me to pose to Kelly, feel free to type them in and we'll get to that. So before we go to break.
Yes, question.
Before we go to break, February seemed like, with Valentine's Day, a natural topic of love. And in that one, you know, one of the entries, you know, talks about self-love and the importance of remembering that. And that's something that I think, you know, when you're thinking about Valentine's Day, it's usually the outward expression of love versus the internal. And so can you talk a little bit about, you know, why you felt it was important to have that particular topic addressed?
Sure. And not only did I think it was important, I thought it was really important and actually, you know, pushed this with the publisher. It needed to be the first chapter in February because I honestly believe, and I look at a lot of my friends who have either gone through divorce or are currently single but looking for a partner, and something that I see a lot is they're missing that self-love chip. You know, they'll say something like, you know, I'm on a diet because, come on, I got to meet a man, or, you know, oh, I want to wear this outfit, or I'm going to get Botox, or whatever it is. And they'll say it as a joke, but it's sort of not a joke. And whether they do it or not, whether they eat healthy, whether they get Botox, that's not really my, you know, I don't care. It's just my observation is it's very hard to get into a relationship with somebody else and fall in love if you're not already in love with yourself. And I'll tell you why, because you lose yourself. So when I met my husband, and this is, you know, years and years ago. I don't want to say how long. Probably we dated 10 years before we got married. So a very long time. A while ago. 20-some-odd years. But, you know, I'm not going to say I changed for him, but we did. We evolved together. And I lost a part of me. but I loved me enough to keep the important parts. You know what I'm saying? And I think if you don't love
right.
you enough, all of a sudden you become something that the other person wants. And guess what? That other person didn't want you to change for them. They liked you the way you were. You know what I mean? So there's this like,
right.
so I think before you can get into a loving relationship with someone else, even a child, even a, you need to be, for a child, they need to see that you love yourself, you know? So I think it's just really important. And I don't think it's easy. I think sometimes that's therapy. Sometimes that's journaling. You know, we have things that we don't like about ourselves, our past, our behavior, our, you know, who knows, we don't like, you got a size 9 foot, you know, whatever it is, you know, just stuff that we don't like. And I think the really most important thing to do is to love yourself. And that sounds so cliche as I'm saying it, but it's, I think it's something you have to work at. I really do. I don't think it can be cliche because it's too hard.
Yeah,
too hard.
Exactly.
You know, we're hard on ourselves. Like, you know, I say all of this, but yet, you know, I'm looking for the pants that make me look skinny, and you know, I'm right there with y'all. You know, I'm right there with y'all. But if you love the core of who you are, and if you're proud of who you are, I think it makes it much easier to have relationships with other people, effective relationships, healthy relationships.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, and it was fun, you know, in addition to the page for journaling, like in February, there was one section that you had about vision boards, you know, how there was,
okay,
you know,
yeah.
fun, creative way. And I have you, and I love that you have an example, successful sales rep. You look quite thin there.
Thank you.
New York Times best-selling author, Kelly Martinson.
Oh,
okay.
We need that. Buy the book.
And that ticket passed, you know, so. But you know, that's, you know, it's fun. I mean, you know, that was just a fun way of showing people exactly, you know, what a vision board can be fun. You know, in
right, and
to,
and it can also,
you know,
be easy, because there's a lot of vision board workshops. I don't know if people have them where you guys are, where whoever the listeners are, but wherever you're coming from. We have them on Long Island. People have a vision board workshop. I mean, there's one available every Thursday night. But, yeah, you'd think I would get to one, right? I believe in the process. I believe it's just too hard. So, again, that's why it's just, you know, I could almost have called this book, You Only Need a Pen and a Piece of Paper for Self-Development, because, you know, you can doodle your vision board. You know, you can do it, and that's what I do. I do it a lot. Probably once a week I'll doodle my vision board, and that's kind of what I did at the very beginning of this journey. I was doodling and writing words, and again, those little doodle boards or vision boards really helped me become very aware of what I wanted to do next.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
So I just think it's helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm going to go ahead and take that quick break, Kelly, and then
sure.
when we come back, we'll continue. So everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store. Or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Kelly McGrath Martinson. She's a publisher of Natural Awakenings Long Island Magazine, and we're talking about her new book called A Year of Inspired Living, Essays and Guided Journaling for Self-Reflection. Again, you can find out more by visiting the website, ayearofinspiredliving.com. And again, I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. And Kelly's book is also available from Amazon.com. Okay, so with that, we're back, Kelly.
Hi.
Hey, okay, great. So, you know, one of the in March, you know, one of the topics that you covered was, you know, consciously eating or conscious about food and, you know, and wellness. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, how, you know, that plays into your magazine, you know, and
sure.
basically, you know, what ways your relationship to food, how that can affect
yep.
your life?
Sure, absolutely. So one of the things with the magazine is that I am aware, and it's a job hazard, I am aware of every healthy eating fad to hit the market. And I've tried every single one to stay healthy. I have a pretty healthy, you know, attitude and lifestyle. But to continue staying healthy in, you know, what I'll call my second act, I've tried everything, the diet for the blood type diet, vegan, vegetarian, all protein, keto. I've tried them all. And to be honest, I think that one of the things that I learned through the magazine and through some of the people I interviewed is balance. And the balance that I actually interviewed Gabby Reese, who is married to Laird Hamilton. She's a professional volleyball player, and she was a supermodel and a professional volleyball player and married an extreme surfer, Laird Hamilton. And she wrote a book, which I love, called My Foot's Too Big for This Glass Slipper. And one of her chapters was on food, and I was in the middle of doing one of, I don't know, maybe a high-protein diet or something. And she gave the concept of why not just be good 70 or 80% of the time and leave yourself 30 to 20% room, wiggle room for that, you know, whether it's a margarita or a bowl of ice cream, but for that splurge. And I think I really kind of fell in love with that concept because it's not depriving yourself, but it's not gorging, you know, and it's not so extreme, you know, the whole idea, like if I only eat protein and I don't touch a carb or look at a carb, I'll lose all this weight or I'll be so thin and strong. So I really like that. I still look at a lot of the fads in the magazine, and not the fads, but the different diet types, because they're interesting, and I think different things work for different people. But I think if you're currently healthy, I think a 70, I keep saying I think, but, you know, it's just my opinion, that 70-30 is a nice thing to aim for. 70% lean protein and greens leaves you 30% room for, you know, the splurge, the occasional splurge. And the other thing we do is we really push two types of exercise in the magazine. Actually, I should say three types of exercise. And we're advocates of some sort of cardiovascular exercise. If you don't run, that's fine. Don't run. Walk. We do articles on walking all the time or biking or walking. But there is a definite need for people to get more active and to get out and to walk around and to just raise your endorphins. So that's really critical. We do a lot of articles on that, on different ways to do it. You know, there's jump rope class. There's anything you want. You can find your endorphin high. That's what I say. It's as easy as finding a drug dealer on the corner because your endorphin high is right there. You can walk fast. You can ride an exercise bike, join a gym. You can do an aerobics class. So that's your sort of your feel-good hormones, your natural serotonin that you can boost. And then the other form of exercise that's really critical for all of us is the weight training because it increases our bone density, which is what we want. We don't want to be, you know, have these brittle bones when we're 80 and 90 because we want to still be out there surfing or riding that bull that was on our list, you know? So strength training is really, really important. And the third is some form of mind exercise. And that really could be anything. You know, for a very long time, people were saying it must be meditation. For me, it's meditation. I meditate and I read. Those are the two, those are my sort of the timeouts that I give myself. But for other people, it may not be meditation. It may be a quiet paddle board ride down the lake, or, you know, it could be a yoga,
a
tai chi,
yeah,
hobby. Yeah, mm-hmm. Something that, you know, my husband does paddle boarding, and he'll say that's his active meditation because it's very easy for him. He can glide into a wave. It's, you know, almost, you know, and that's his active meditation. But you need some, you know, crossword puzzles, something, yeah, a hobby, yeah, anything, you know, model planes, something that you have to, and this is why surfing, even though it fits the other two goals too, surfing for me is so ideal because when you are catching a wave, and then when you're riding the wave and you're trying to get right into the middle of that tube, you cannot, no matter how hard you try, you can't think about, how's my kid doing in high school? Who is she being bullied? Who is it? You, the only thought you can have is, okay, I'm in right here. If I dip to the left, I'm going to fall off and hit that jetty. You know, it's really the only thing you can do is focus right where you are. And meditations like that, although you tend to have mind travel, you know, where you're traveling to the thing, you have to kind of pull yourself back. But like you said, a hobby is, if you have a hobby where you can really just dial into it, that's just such a good break for your brain.
Yeah,
so those are
the
three forms. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You know, it was funny. When I was putting together the photos for the show, for the little photo rotation, and I, you know, I kind of went, I went onto Facebook, you know, since I had your Facebook thing, I was looking through pictures, and I just couldn't help it, but I had to put up the surfing one. I mean, that was the one that was like, you know, I mean, that this looks like she is in her element, so to speak.
I was just saying, you
know,
if you see my face, it's such a funny picture too, because it's not even like a big wave, but my face, like when I'm surfing, it's all you're thinking about, and it's for me. I'm definitely in my element. And the interesting thing on that is I didn't learn how to do it until 8 years ago. So,
wow.
You know, I found this new sort of extreme hobby at a later stage in life, which I think makes it even more fun for me, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you talked about walking, for me, it was right now I do it every morning. That's just kind of my therapy. But when probably, gosh, it was now almost 4 years ago when I was walking one day, I had the idea for my first book, Joy Potential, and it was like, and when I got back to my house, I kind of jotted down everything that popped into my head, and then I went to write some more, and I couldn't. So the next morning, I got up and I walked, and I got the next thing. So it basically got to be a habit where, you know, every morning, I would walk, get insight, and write it down, and I just laughed because, I mean, there would be days I couldn't walk because it was cold or rainy or, you know, something like that. and I would sit down to write, and it just wouldn't work. And I was like, you know. So, I mean, I laughed because my guides really got me on a walking regimen by
forcing they did.
Me to walk. You know? But then by
That's
the
awesome.
End of it, it was, you know, it got to the point where, you know, it was – I felt that I needed that. So, you know, and there would be days I would wake up with a to-do list a mile long, thinking, you know, I really don't have time for that. But then I realized I don't have time not to. I mean, you know, I really,
right.
You know, that was a necessity.
And can I ask, do you still walk?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Good, that's great, because that's the other thing, too. So many people do.
Yeah.
I mean, me too. I did yoga religiously for like 6 years, but I haven't done it in a while. So I was curious if you still walked after you wrote your book.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Good.
And
that's
it's,
good.
But it was just, I mean, it got to the point where that was the case. And, you know, now it's, you know, kind of like my Zen moment. I do amateur photography, so I take my camera and I just, you know, go out and see what nature wants to show me to take a
picture.
Nice.
Yeah, photography is another thing. That's great. You can connect with nature, with people. You know, you can see things through a different screen. Like, that's a great sort of active meditation.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the in April, there was one section that you talked about tomorrow. You know, the focus was on tomorrow, but there was, at the end, there was like an activity for people to do that it was, let me kind of read, it was basically to write down what you hated that happened during the day, and then before going to sleep, cross it off. And I thought, you know, that is a perfect activity for those days when it's just, you know, been full of stuff that went wrong.
Right. You need, and again, you need to spill it out and say, this happened, and then just either rip the page out or cross it out, because tomorrow's another day. Like, a lot of times, we all do this, I do this, like, you can't let go of the bad day. You know, I had an argument once with a surfer in the ocean, and here I am, 48 years old, I'm not going to argue with a surfer, you know, but there it was happening. He was mad because me and my niece were surfing his quote-unquote wave. It was hardly a wave. It was like a foot high. But, and she's 16, I'm teaching. It was such a bizarre experience. And, you know, he's yelling at me, this is my wave. I'm saying, are you ridiculous? I've seen 50 surfers share this break. There's three of us, you know. But the whole day I was mad. And what was worse is, like, and this is a different chapter in the book, but what was worse is that anger stayed with me because I didn't do anything with it. I didn't, like, write it on a piece of paper, maybe more than once you have to do it, but then kind of cross it out and, like, let it go so you can move on to have your next inspired day, you know. Instead, it stayed with me for a very long time. You know, every day I wasn't even surfing for like a few weeks because I was so twisted about that argument, you know, because we can get that way. We can get really twisted and things can stay with us. And, you know, we only go around this world once. Yeah. We really want to make it our most inspired, make it the best it can be, the most enjoyable it can be, the most happy it can be, you know, within your
life. Yeah, you know. Yeah, you know, I know on occasion whenever I find, you know, that there's something that just really made me angry, you know, and that may be days or even a week or two later that it pops back up again, you know, I just, it makes me kind of stop and think, you know, first of all, why are you holding on to this, you know?
Why are you giving this power, this thing power, in your life, right? I mean, and again, it seems easy to say, mm-hmm. But, you know, I've been there, too, and it's, you know, it's work. But the writing, I like that idea a lot, writing it before you go to bed and then, you know, kind of
crossing
it out.
Well, you know, it's good, you know, and when I read that particular exercise, I thought, you know, this is good, you know, for those cases where maybe there's just something really difficult to let go of, you know, something that I really want to put to bed and not have it affect me in the future, you know, to do the writing and, you know, burn it up, tear it up, cross it off, you know, whatever, you know, depending how intense the anger is. You know, if it's really angry, it'll be burned up. You know,
for sure. Smile,
so you'll just cross it off.
Right, burn it.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, for sure.
Well, yeah, you know, and one of the other topics that you wrote about, and it was in July, was about judgmental, being, you know, judgmental. And, you know, I thought it was interesting. You gave an example of the first negative feedback you received from the magazine.
Like that jerk.
The jerk, yeah. But you know, can you talk a little bit about that? Because you know, I'm sure you probably had a lot of positive feedback, you know, but you know, every now and then, you know, you're going to get that negative feedback. So, tell us a little bit about that and kind of how you worked through that aspect.
Sure, and that incident was really funny because I got a voicemail from somebody who is just yelling at my voicemail saying, your magazine, it's preaching communism and your advertisers, all they want to do is make money. And I was thinking, that's really, you know, the antithesis of communism, capitalism, you know. So he was complaining about two different things and he was yelling, and then at the very end he said, and he was ranting, and he said, I don't even know what this is about. And it was such a light bulb that we do that. We judge something or someone without the full, you know, knowledge of who they are or why they're doing what they're doing. And again, it's kind of like the person on Facebook. Like, we're judging, oh, she's doing this because of that. We almost assign our beliefs and then assume it's reality. Oh, Reagan bought a new car because she wants us to think she has money. Well, maybe Reagan never bought a new car. Maybe her ailing grandfather just gave it to her because it was his dying wish to give her something and he has no other money. You know what I mean? We don't know the backstory, but we judge. And we judge based on cars. We judge based on money or lack of money. And we don't, it's just very irresponsible because, and again, it's me too, I do it. It's irresponsible because we don't know everybody's story. We don't know everybody's journey, but yet we judge, you know? And so this guy judging my magazine or the Natural Awakenings brand, to me, it was so, first I was really mad, but then I was laughing because I was like, he just said he doesn't even know what this magazine's about. It's the first time he's ever seen it, and he didn't read it, you know? So I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's what we're doing in this world. He would rather call me and tell me my magazine is a communism magazine than read it and understand it. And I just think we need to do that with each other. You know, you meet somebody, and you think certain things about them because maybe they carry a fancy handbag, or maybe because they don't carry a fancy handbag. Whatever it is, you make a judgment. We make judgments so quickly, and I think if we could pause, and again, this comes with slowing down, having a hobby, meditating, if we pause, then maybe the first thing that comes out of our brain when we meet somebody isn't a judgment. It's a,
yeah.
I want to get to know you more. Oh, you're different. Okay, you're different than me. Let me discover you. Let me, you know, that kind of thing.
Exactly. You know, I remember real clearly the first negative feedback I got on my book, Joy Potential. It was with a local newspaper, you know, person who did book reviews and that kind of thing. And I mean, I knew it was coming out, so of course the day it came out, I just ran to got a newspaper and read it. And it was really good for, like, most of it. It got down to the very end. It was like, you know, I was a bit disappointed with the ending, you know.
Oh,
you know,
no.
It was not what I expected. Da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
I was stabbed in the heart, you know.
That's terrible. I know how that, you know what, because we're vulnerable. Like, this book is really, these books are us. They're our souls, you know. So if you're just, you know, if somebody says they're disappointed with the ending, you're like, wait, you're disappointed with me. That's me.
I know. But you know what's funny? Because the ending is completely like a surprise, too. I mean, it was one of those things that it was just, you know, throughout the book, it was kind of led you to believe one thing, and then at the end, it was something. So after a while, it's like, okay, well, you know, that's cool, because it really is different. You know, it's not what one would expect. So, but you know, when I was reading that section that you wrote, you had like the perfect response to you know, something, you know, to someone who maybe you disagree with what they're saying, and that was you know, that's right, and then kind of in your mind mentally for you, you know.
That's
a great way to handle that.
I love that. And again, I have to incorporate it more. It's not something I invented. I went to a great public speaking event, and this gentleman by the name of Panache Desai, he's a well-known spiritual speaker, and he gave us that. He said, you want to stop all, like, negative stuff in you, in your life, and you want to stop negative arguments, and you want to just, like, make room for all this positive stuff. We're all filled with opinions. So if somebody comes up to you and says, I like Trump or I like Hillary, all you have to say, you don't have to say, oh, you like Hillary, I like Trump. Want to hear why? I'm right. You're wrong. Like, cut it off. Just say, oh, that's right. And then in your head, say, for you, because it's right for them. It's right for this guy and for the magazine. This magazine probably wasn't for him, and he probably does hate it. And you know what? Okay, that's right for him. In my head, I say for him. So, you know, that's a great, I love that. I got that from Panache, and it just really is. If you're getting into a space where somebody's saying something that you don't agree with, it's not your job to convince them that they're wrong, although it can be fun. Sometimes it's better to say, oh, that's right. And then even you don't agree one bit, because in your head you're thinking, for you. That's right for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's a nice
So you're
kind of
being
move
honest.
On.
You're being honest with yourself, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to realize that you're kind of disagreeing, you know.
Right.
You know, and so it's kind of like, so being agreeable, but being honest to yourself. So anyway,
sure,
I like that.
Sure.
That's one thing I'm certainly going to be applying into my life.
I like that too. You know what? I got to remember though. Again, that's why I really like the idea of keeping the book around. And I think I mentioned to you we're going to be doing this thing on Facebook on my author page once a month, where we kind of all get together and just check in and talk about how we're living inspired. And, you know, hopefully it'll go past the year. And because we do forget. I forget all the time. I forget to love myself. I forget to say, that's right for you. You know, I forget. Uh-huh. I write it all down, and then 2 weeks later, I'm like, oh, I didn't want to remember. You were going to say, that's right. You weren't going to yell at that person.
Right.
So,
well,
you know, we're all
working
the process.
Yeah, I mean, we've all been trained, you know, in a certain way, and to retrain ourselves, it takes a while sometimes.
For sure, yeah.
Yep. Well, Kelly, this has really been delightful. We're toward the end of the show, so is there maybe anything that you may want to mention to listeners, or maybe what you hope that listeners will, or the reader will take away from reading your book?
Yeah, well, sure. I hope that, you know, your listeners will pick up a copy of the book because I think it's really fun and the feedback's been really positive so far. We've gotten some great, I think it was out 2 days, we got 2 really good Amazon reviews, and so that was really fun. But I also think if you don't even buy my book, if you just walk away from this call and grab a pen and a piece of paper and just start doodling, jotting, you know, almost like you did when you were in Miss McGillicuddy's math class and you were zoning out and you drew pictures, you know, because those things that you're doodling, that you're writing, they're your own mind telling you what lays ahead. So I just do really advocate journaling and writing. I think it's for me, it's had a profound impact. It's placed me in a position where I purchased a magazine and now I'm a business owner. It's placed me in another position where I'm writing, where I wrote a book. It just really helped. And I don't know where it's going to take me next. You know, I just doodle and I kind of look back and see. But the book's a great way to start for people who don't journal or who have been journaling for 20, 30 years, 10 years, 5 years. The book's really good, too, because it's a different, it will make it fresh and new. So I think,
right,
I think,
yeah. And like, you know, the topics are those that can be applied, you know, people go through all the time. So, I mean, it's
right.
Just one of those.
Yeah.
So, you know, very real life experiences. So, by the way, I just want to let you know a couple of the comments in the chat room that you're great, genuine and sincere. So that really came across.
Thank you. I think you guys are great.
I have to agree
with
them as well.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Well, great. Well, I'll be sure to follow your author. I'm sorry?
I said I'm also a little crazy. I admit that.
that's perfect. Our kind of people. So, well, I'm going to definitely follow you, your author page on Facebook, and keep abreast of those live appearances that you're going to do. And I really want to thank you, Kelly. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you. And the Facebook page is author Kelly McGrath Martinson. In case anybody wants to follow me.
Great. Okay.
Thanks.
Well,
I really appreciate this time. It was fun. Thank you.
Great. You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Kelly McGrath Martinson. We've been talking about her new book, A Year of Inspired Living, Essays and Guided Journaling for Self-Reflection. And again, you can find out more by visiting the website, ayearofinspiredliving.com. Again, there is a direct link to that website in the show page description. And be sure to join her on Facebook for those live appearances. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.